Hi, and welcome back. Let's pick up where we left off.
Yes, greetings and Bula Vinaka again. This is a podcast, and we acknowledge as part of the feminist media team for Femlink, really acknowledging the three amazing and passionate women that we have here with us. Maureen Petruelli from PENG, Andy Vasu from Transcend Oceania, and also Cressida Kuala from PERGA Red Sara Women's Association. This is all part of a dialogue which we will have in a Talanoa style, just an extension of the conversation that we have been having from the last 2 days, about the workshop that has a focus on advancing women, peace and security, building inclusive resilience in the Pacific. Yeah? So welcome, ladies, and it's such a pleasure to have you all today, and we look forward to your contribution. And having said that, we have a few questions here, and you are most welcome to add in your input wherever you feel that aligns to the work that you're already. And that brings us to the last question, where we are going to be, the question is around seeing where we are at in terms of climate impacts on our communities and community livelihood. What trends do you predict in 2025 with regards to the impact on security and stability as a result of climate change and food access? So that is basically around, you know, what is your prediction in terms of the trend where we are at now, say in 2025, which is the next 2 years, what would you say on the impact on security and stability when it comes to the conversation around climate change and food access?
When it comes around climate change and food access, the government, the national governments, are concerned about our lives, the way of living. And even in the start, our traditional ancestors have survived on subsistence livelihood. They know their own ways of survival means. They have a special bond with the land and the waters and the bush. They get everything from what they collect from the soil, from the bush, from the plants, from the rivers, and the water itself. They drink and they survive. They know how to find their proteins from the jungle. And then life advances into the next centuries and millenniums. We change life, our lives, livelihood, and the environment changed. And all these multinational corporates, the companies, the industries coming into our countries. I've heard that Pacific was known as the Ring of Fire, and we are rich in mineral and resources. The people from the north, they come to get our resources, but they come to get it and they leave us without giving us back what we deserve. We have to be strong. We lost everything that our ancestors owned. I believe in changes, but in a different way. I see in 2 years' time, we don't have any other choice. We know what we are doing and we know how to create solutions to our problems, but I don't think we will end these problems. It comes and it stays. We know we must teach ourselves to stand firm and face the future, but we have to face the future with everything that we need in an improved way, and we will do this together, united, and we have to preserve our customs, our tradition, our land, our environment, our resources. We have to teach our children our traditional knowledges, way of living. I believe that in 2 years' time, if we create quality leadership in women, because we think about food in the house, we are managers of our house, as you said, my sister, we will be good and improved and powerful leaders in our homes when we build a network from local communities to the regional level in the Pacific. We were known as people from the Pacific Ring of Fires. We are owners of the resources. We are rich. We have everything. And they still see us as poor, poverty-driven nation. Why? Because we are facing issues that we can't control, we can minimize. If we stand together in these 2 years' time to create quality leadership in women, good education, yearly-based education, if we have a more advanced agricultural adjustment programs, we will improve our way of producing food on our soil, because we already have the knowledge, but we have to improve our knowledge to produce our food on our land. And we must come together to talk about issues. We don't have to fall silent on all those physical abuse and sexual violence that we have faced. We must stand up and say no. We have to move together, men and women, children and youths, stand together to be smart, to live our life on this earth and on our land. Thank you.
Naka, just adding on to what's already being shared by my sisters here, I'd like to, based my Talanoa on the context of peace building and peacekeeping, with this analysis and the two aspects work towards security differently. For example, in peacekeeping, we try to minimize the violence and the conflict and control it at its point. And with peace building, nonviolently, we take it from there, moving forward in a nonviolent action without having to analyze or to violate the rights of different parties involved. And this work is, I could see coming together centered in the security issues that we talk about, the security matters in terms of defense aspect of security, and the security in terms of what's what's important and practical in our lives, like the principles of security that we had talked about in terms of food security, women, peace and security. With these practices implemented timely and efficiently, and each aspect of these areas is looked at, attended to differently, but timely. And also that we maintain this practice of there's not one fix for all, that each of these different areas must be looked at differently, but collectively, that it brings about a more peaceful approach and a win-win situation. Reaffirming this is to to add on to the question, to answer the question, is with consistency to this, I see in the next 2 years or few years to come, that we together, working collectively on the different areas that we are doing, will be more resilient as a community, as a people of a region, in how we respond to issues of climate change, where we are able to attend to and effectively engage and respond towards a more resilient Pacific, a more climate ready and climate prepared community or Pacific. We may be small island states, we are big ocean, we are big in terms of how we value each other. We are big in terms of how we value our community and our connectivity and our connections with each other. We hold value to traditional knowledge and the knowledge we bring to the table. And with consistency of this and engaging to other knowledge-based solutions, I see that in 2 years' time, we will be a step up better in our in terms of climate security, climate resilience, and sustainability.
Maybe just to add that, I mean, it's really important to recognize that if we're going to talk about a current and at least be able to forecast for the next year or two, really to acknowledge that we are coming out of a pandemic. And I think the Ukraine war is already having lots of implications internally. Many of our countries are now in debt stress. And so when you overlay the fact that we are going to be looking at a La Nina season, where we're expecting ocean temperatures to increase, we need to be looking at this in that kind of integrated way to understand and be able to project what security or insecurities will come up. Cressida already said that, you know, our countries and governments, to be able to service the kinds of debt stress that we're in, we'll be looking more and more to exploitative activities such as mining, logging. On the ocean space, we're seeing a scale-up of industrialization around fishing. So we'll be seeing a scale-up in terms of these kinds of exploitation and activities. And that's a source of insecurity, because it's going to challenge people's access to land, ability to cultivate, maintain subsistence. And I think it's very critical that we recognize that subsistence economy is the backbone of our people. In fact, it is the thing that sustains and provides us with food security. And it's the thing that is really under pressure. At the basis of a subsistence economy is the abilities of our people to still access land, which is governed through a customary land tenure system. Again, all the pressures are coming in to open up customary land tenure systems to enable private ownership of land. And again, this would disadvantage women more specifically when this happens. So in the context of the... So all of these key external factors will shape how the La Nina season will play out. It's going to affect coral reefs, so we're already seeing bleaching ability to recover. So that means that for coastal communities that are heavily dependent on coastal fisheries, we're going to see a decline in catch, quality of catch, which means that protein sources will decrease in the year, next year or so. So we can make these kinds of predictions. We'll be seeing less fresh water. There will be, we're talking about food, but I think access to water will become quite critical, and this is key for countries where we are now extending droughts, and our countries are now really looking at water as a new resource for where insecurities will come up. So I think but we need to look at this in that wider dimension of the kinds of development activities our governments will undertake, how that will implicate, and partly because we're in this kinds of debt crisis coming out of a pandemic.
Just add on a point on the realities of climate change and a recent research that we're still currently doing on the Pacific Blue Carbon Program in terms of prediction. Currently, the findings on blue carbon is that it has increased to the limit. I mean, we have evidence of stored carbon that that we've exceeded the limit, and we are working together on ways of and strategies to reduce this. So unless we are able to reduce the carbon consistently in the next couple of years, then we would be able to those predictions a bit more reality, bring it to our reality than how it impacts climate and climate change to zero it down to 0.5. So those are just some realities that we, the small island countries, are having to face in our mangroves and seagrasses storing carbon that's being the environment that's being affected by bigger countries who are accessing our Pacific Ocean in doing all kinds of activity that contributes to the impact of carbon, blue carbon and green carbon as well.
Oh, well. Thank you so much. I'm actually sitting here and I'm really inspired by all your sharing, your inputs and overview that you are sharing, you know, in terms of the direct impacts of climate change, not only to our food security, but also to our community livelihood and even our survival, you know, as Pacific Islanders and humankind. Eh? And it's such a pleasure to host this podcast. And thank you again, Maureen, and also Andy Vasu, and also Cressida. We really, really appreciate all the insightful and comprehensive inputs that you've given, you know, recognizing the diverse work that you're all doing, but all with a common goal that we try to, you know, try and improve the community livelihood at the grassroots level and also our engagement at different levels that we are working on, and also, you know, trying to all build our community resilience that has been a continuous struggle, and really finding ways that we can collectively work together so that, you know, we can advance the work within women, peace and security. Again, thank you all for your time, and I just would like to say keep up the great work that you are doing, and we look forward to more engagement with you all in future.
Vinaka. Thank you.
Naka.
Thank you, Tomas.
Thank you, Tomas.
On behalf of the entire WCAPS team, thank you so much to all those who participated in this podcast series. Not only do we appreciate your insights, but we really look forward to the work that you and your communities are doing to help to alleviate the burden associated with climate change and food access. And to all of you who are new to the WCAPS podcast, if you really enjoy this, take a moment to like us. Better yet, why don't you go ahead and subscribe so you won't miss an episode.